Good afternoon and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and I'm so happy that you're here today. Welcome. I hope for the next hour you can just take a nice deep breath, maybe even turn off your Outlook, just relax and focus on you and your learning. We've got a great show ahead of you today. So Lunch with Leaders is where we Penn Medicine leaders come together in community and share with one another. There's no doubt this has been a very challenging time to be a leader. And quite frankly, it's always a challenging time to be a leader. So this is our space, a safe space, where we can really learn from one another, as well as our expert guests that we have today. As a reminder, all of our back episodes can be found on the Lead Strong webpage. So make sure you tell your friends. So welcome to Lunch with Leaders, show number 30. I can hardly believe it. It feels like just yesterday when we were at show one. I want to thank all of you for continuing to tune in. I have a funny story about last week's show. PMA was facilitating in-person retreat at the Inn of Penn 2 weeks ago, the Friday following our last Lunch with Leaders. And you may remember the guests were Chris Tierney from Pennsylvania Hospital, Michelle Weitzman-Garcia, an external expert, and Dr. Mitch Schnall from radiology. And the topic was all about high potentials and how to best manifest their potential. So I see Dr. Parmasek and he comes up to me at the retreat and he said, the show's really hit an all-time high. Alvin and the Chipmunks, not bad, Morgan. And she was pretty good. If you know what I'm talking about, I'm sure you're smiling right now. One of our guests' hidden talents was singing in the Alvin Chipmunk voice. And to quote Mike Parmasek, she's pretty good. You don't want to miss it. Make sure you tune in. So thanks for the feedback, as always. You like the show. I thought the show was good. There were a couple of techie moments, but I was a little nervous about that, but I heard that it went okay. So thanks always for your feedback. I'd also say I got some feedback about people liking me in pink, so I thought I'd have a repeat color performance today. Although, if I'm honest with you, there was this one executive a couple of years back who said that I look like a flamingo in this dress. When I thought about putting it on today, I said, that's okay. I'm just happy I fit in this dress following COVID. So pink flamingo, here I am. But I digress. If you missed the last show, make sure you check it out on the Lead Strong webpage. It's a really good one. Youngin, you got some plugs for us today?
Yes, Cindy. Hi. Hi, everyone. It's great to have you here. Thanks to all those who joined. And if you like the last one, I have just a training for you. We have a course with Michelle, now virtual, still interactive, coming up this fall. So we have three dates. The morning will be on creating feedback-rich environments using competencies. The afternoon will go deeper into discussing interviewing and development planning. You can sign up for both. You can do it in different days, all totally flexible. Please come and learn more about these great tools. And then the second one is our book club. We already have a lot of people who signed up. It's going to be great on Wednesday, September 29th, 7 to 8 p.m. How to Change by Katie Milkman. Thanks, Gretchen, for posting the links to register and to get the book. We simplify the process. So you will register and order the book at the same time. You can always go back to the email that came out announcing the evening, which was the email on July 21st. And then the CME credit. So more than 1,200 credits have been claimed just this year. And while it's working for some, we do know that there have been some issues. But the key is that you have to have an active profile in the cloud CME, including your cell phone, degree, and profession, and make sure that the system links your profile and mobile number. And that's where you can actually attend, record the attendance. So please make sure that your profile is set up. And today's code is 72908. Make sure, again, the profile is set up and text the code to 215-398-6728. It's open for next 24 hours. And for any questions, always you can reach out to the CME office. They're very helpful and responsive. Enjoy the show. Thank you.
Youngin, Ted Lasso season two is back. Did you watch the first episode?
I did. Oh, I was crying, laughing. It was great.
Don't miss it. All right, so let's turn our attention to today's show because it's going to be fabulous. Just how important is being a good communicator for leaders like us? One study showed that 3 in 4 employees see effective communication as the number one leadership attribute. Yet less than 1 in 3 employees actually feel like their leader communicates effectively. Being a strong communicator, it does a lot of things for us. 1, it avoids confusion. 2, provides purpose. 3, can foster a transparent culture. 4, creates accountability. And 5, it builds productivity and growth. So bottom line, strong communicators, they really drive employee engagement, motivation, and productivity. And who can't stand to get just a little bit better in terms of how they manage their own communication? That's why today we're focusing on driving internal communication. Here are some of the objectives that we hope to hit today around understanding some of the key fundamentals. We definitely want to hear from you. We've got a great set of guests today who are going to share their expertise. So please share your thoughts in the chat. I want to hear your tips. I'm going to pull them into the conversation. If you have questions for our guests, I'm going to pull those in also. Before I introduce our great lineup, pull out your cell phones. I've got to take a quick pulse to see how you're doing today. So using your cell phone, you're going to text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. Then you'll be in the survey. If you have a problem, let Gino know in the chat and we'll try to figure it out. What emotions are you feeling today? And while you're answering that, it's my great honor to introduce our 3 guests today. First, we have Dr. Sean Grady, who is the physician director of the Neuroservices Service Line. We have Debbie Foster, Senior Director of Internal Communications, and we have Sarah Johnson, Chief Operating Officer, Penn Medicine at Home. Hi to the 3 of you. We're really lucky to have you. Before I turn it over to you, I need to just give you all a quick highlight as you're inputting in your words today. We've been tracking this, as you know, since the start of Lunch with Leaders, but we really try to look at this time period since last December. And what's interesting is we've seen a really good proportion of positive emotions with the highest positivity in June at 74%. What's been interesting is we're seeing a negative trend and we're seeing negative emotions such as anxious, burnout, and overwhelmed have been trending all summer long. We hear you. We see you. I'm really hoping that you can get some time away this summer because we have no doubt the fall will be intense. So I wanted to just share with you what the trends have been. Casey, if you wouldn't mind flipping over to see how today's trends are, I'd love to see these words, see if they're similar or a little different. All right, tired, happy, that's a good one. Overwhelmed, busy, drained, focused, encouraged. Sorry, you're feeling underappreciated. I appreciate you, I hope you know that. Sean, do these words surprise you at all? Is this what you're seeing?
You know, the tired phrase really resonates a little bit because it's been, it went through a very tough year. And then we have this recycle again of the Delta variant. And wow, that's just not what we want to hear about right now. So, you know, I think, you know, all of the stress and tiredness and exhaustion and so forth, I think all fits pretty well. I mean, I hope people are taking some time off this summer and getting their energies recharged for the fall, which is going to be busy.
Thanks. Well, I want to jump right in. I don't want to waste 1 minute. I want to get some expertise on communication. So I'm going to start with you, the audience. My first questions are to you, and I'd love to hear all of you in the chat. I want you to think about the strongest communicator you ever worked with or for. What did he or she do to have an impact? Conversely, think about the worst communicator you ever worked with or for. What did he or she do or didn't do? So I'd love to hear, just obviously label what worked, what didn't work. We'd love to hear your opinions. In the meantime, I'm very excited to turn our expertise over. We're going to start with you, Debbie Foster. Let me just give a quick overview around kind of your background. Studied photography in undergraduate, then got your master's in graphics design. I love that you're a part of a Penn Medicine power couple. Your husband is Tim Naylor, another Penn Medicine leader. You were traveling the world, Germany, Japan, part of military family. And then you came back to the United States, started in graphic design, and then worked your way up to be leading internal communications. I was so honored to have you as my partner for the last 6 years up until this year in PMA. So I'm just so happy that everyone can learn from you. I know I always do. You have built your career around communications, Debbie. So from your perspective, why is this so important for leaders?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me here today, Cindy. But to answer your question, it really is integrated. It's the same. You use the same skills as a good communicator as you do as a good leader, right? It really comes down to understanding your people, understanding what motivates them, what they respond to, and then framing the things that you need them to know around those same, you know, skills about what motivates them. So if you are a strong leader, you are likely a strong communicator and vice versa, but I think we can all, you know, pick up some skills along the way to improve that.
So I'm hoping you can be here today to give us your top five tips for strong internal communications. And you put together a couple slides. Maybe we could pull those up. Hit me with your top five.
So my number one thing that I tell everyone is this idea of BLUF, which is a military acronym that stands for bottom line up front. I think particularly, you know, here in an academic medical center, you know, we have a tendency to have a lot of information we need to share. Sometimes it's very dense. So really flipping your communication so that you're writing with that most important piece of information at the top of the, whether it's communicating verbally or in written communications, that bottom line upfront acronym really helps drive a lot of effective communications and really helps people drill into what's most important for them and what you're telling them, and help them really prioritize their time too. So if they're looking at something that's going to take a lot of time and they're, you know, reading an email 5 minutes between meetings, then they'll know to, you know, put that aside and look for something later. So bottom line up front is my number one advice.
I got to give John W. at Pennsylvania Hospital a big shout out. He's always with the BLUF, especially in those weather emergencies. I'm like, all right, today, thunderstorm warnings, hail possible. I like the BLUF. Give me a number two.
Sure. So number two is really context is everything. And I think, you know, thinking about your role as a leader, you know, in a highly matrix organization like Penn Medicine is, we really depend on managers and leaders to cascade information down. And I think it's great when you get information and then you share it out with your teams, because we know that they're listening to you as their leader, but helping them also understand how it relates to them, how it impacts them personally. So using something like Success Share as an example, you know, we know that Success Share is really based on the success of the organization. And just sending the memo around that comes from senior leadership to your team is great. But if you can also add a note or two at the top to say, here's how your individual contributions led to the organization as a whole being successful and us all earning Success Share, is a great way to help set context for the team, help them, as Cindy noted earlier, you know, feel like they're a part of the team, that they've got clear understanding of their purpose in the organization. And so really making sure that, again, tapping into their motivations, that they understand how each of these pieces fits into the whole of what they're doing here.
Thank you. Good one. Next one. Ah, the shampoo effect. Hit me.
Yep. So rinse and repeat. You cannot say it enough. And not just the same thing over and over again, but really varying your delivery, saying something, you know, in a meeting, handing out something in writing, and then also making sure they're getting it by email or text message or whatever works for your team. But, you know, one and done is never effective as a communications tool. So just completely, really reinforcing those key messages and those key actions that you want people to take over and over and over again. You just can't do it enough.
I remember back in like the 80s, you know, a long time ago, maybe it was the early 90s, to my defense. I remember there was like an advertising slogan that was someone needed to see an ad like seven times for it to actually stick. That was before the information superhighway and, you know, Facebook and everything else. Now I'm sure the number has got to be like so much higher than 7. And that's when things were simple. Now I think you got to get your message out there, you know, 20, 25 times for someone even to get it. All right, what's the next one?
Find your influencers, and shout out to Dr. Grady, who shared this great visual with us to include today. But, you know, your influencers are the people who other people listen to and like, ultimately. So looking at your team, looking at your department, looking at your unit, and really, like, who are those people that everyone's listening to? And then use them as a conduit for information.
This word listening is coming up in the chat. Probably, like, I don't know, 50% of the people who have written in talk about being a good listener as some of the best qualities, as some of the communication techniques. All right, give me your last one.
So this might not seem obvious to everyone, but really establishing norms around communications, Cindy, as you just noted, we're getting hit now by even just internally. We have text messages, emails, MS Teams chats, and channels and videos. It's a lot. And so really meeting with your team and establishing how you're going to communicate, what the expectations are, and setting some rules and guidelines around that really helps. And then revisiting it frequently. My team will, if they're on here, will let you know that we quarterly have this conversation on our team to make sure that the rules that we've established are working, that as new technologies get introduced to the work that we're doing here, that we're figuring out the best way to incorporate them, and so that we're not overwhelming each other when we need to get a hold of someone, and that we make sure that people know where to look for the information that they need.
I think that's so smart, Debbie. Just today, someone texted me on MS Teams, and then I like got an email, and I was like, oh, I didn't know this. And then it was on MS Teams, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm better at text. And then I'm like, oh, I'm very old. I'm like not a millennial who's hip in MS Teams chat. And I'm like, oh, one more communication channel that I have to pay attention to. Bela Kemp, big shout out to you, Debbie. These are the best top five. Kim, thanks for not liking chat also. So let me go back to the audience. Are, in your minds, are engagement and communications correlated? If so, how are you driving engagement through communication, and what are some of the strategies that you use? In the meantime, let me go over Dr. Grady. So great to have you here. What I am so impressed with, and I can't wait to talk about your career a little later, you were the chair of neurosurgery starting in 1999 through just last year. You've been the head of the neurosciences service line since the inception of service lines. Maybe even cooler, you also evaluate Eagles football players on the sidelines to make sure that they don't have concussions a couple of times a year. I'm so glad that you're here with us, and thank you for all of your great leadership. Sarah Johnson, also, I can't wait for your career story. Been at Penn Medicine since 2011 as a CHRO, first at Penn Home Care and Hospice, then CHRO of Pennsylvania Hospital. Then after doing some special executive projects in human resources across the system, you moved to director of COO at Penn Medicine at Home. You even worked at Aramark before, and you were the rep to HUP and PPMC. You have a long legacy, Wharton MBA. We're just so thrilled that the two of you are here. So Dr. Grady, let me start with you. Reflections on Debbie's top five. Are these the same top five you'd have? Would you add a different one?
You know, thanks for inviting me, Cindy. It's a real privilege to be here. Boy, she was spot on, particularly during this last year, during the COVID epidemic. The bottom line up front, know your audience. And listen, it's all about understanding the audience you're communicating with and the message you want to deliver. And it's tough, you know, in this kind of environment, as opposed to an audience that you're talking to and so forth. But your message will never get through unless you tailor it for the people that you're speaking to. Different audiences, of course, you have to think about that audience, whether in my case it could be faculty, it could be residents, it could be nurses, you know, other leadership and so forth. It won't get across unless you put it in the channel that they listen to. Those were great. Those were terrific.
Thank you. I like that addition. Sarah, reflections on Debbie's top five. Would you have a different top five? Anything else you'd include or things you'd highlight?
No, I mean, I think that they were spot on too. And, you know, I really do. I get the John W. email bluffs every morning. I think about them all the time. And I think about them in the fact of like honesty and transparency in our communication. It's just so important. And we need to be out front and getting people the messages, you know, as quickly and as thoughtfully, to Dr. Grady's point, as possible, to make sure that people feel, and to your point about engagement, people feel like they're part of something when they're in the know, they have the messages, they kind of understand what's going on and feel that connection. And communication and Debbie's tips are essential to all of those pieces, whether we cascade them down or whether across, or and we have to think about the different modes of communication that we use in different entities. And having worked in a couple different entities, it's you have to do it in very different ways, whether you're in a hospital, at the practices, in corporate, or at Penn Medicine at home, where most of our workforce is remote.
Sarah, let me stick with you for a second. Let's get into some specifics. Like, what do you do? When do you do a stakeholder analysis before you're creating your communication strategy? Do you think that's worth it? And how do you effectively pick the channel or communication tool you're going to use?
We have time with, especially with change communication. I think a stakeholder analysis is essential. And I think you need to take the time to plan your communication plan. Who gets a message first? Why? Ask. Maybe take a couple to the influencers question. Talk to some people who you're going to message to about the change or any message. What's the best mode? It's always good to ask that question when you're doing that planning of a successful communication strategy. And so, yeah, to your point, I always try to do a stakeholder analysis. I always try to plan it as much as possible. Really, an actual written communication plan for how that's going to go. What's going to go email? What's going to be a person? What's going to be in the town hall? What's going to be one-to-one in a cubicle? You know, all of those stuff is important so that we can make sure those messages are heard and we're listening along the way.
Thanks. Shauna, let me ask you the same question. Are you as intentional as Sarah is? Are you doing stakeholder analysis? Are you doing it in your mind? Are you writing it down? How do you figure out what your communication tools are as well?
Yeah, so particularly around change management, I spend a lot of time thinking about the audience and the message that I'm trying to deliver. The thing that, you know, so if you're just handing out information, that's one thing, and then you keep it very brief, very to the point. If you're doing change management, you really have to figure out what is the win for the other person in making a change that you propose. Some of that, as Sarah mentioned, is doing some backgrounding beforehand, talking to a couple of individuals, the influencers who people are going to turn to them. What do you think about what he just said? So you've front-loaded them a little bit. But most importantly, making sure that the message you're giving, again, around change management, is something that they will say, oh, that sounds like a win. It will be adopted so much easier.
Thanks. If you're wondering what a stakeholder analysis is or how you might do one, Gretchen just posted a tool that Debbie Foster and the PMA team have worked to build to try to make this as seamless and as turnkey as possible. Debbie, let me go to you. So many people are inundated with email, as you said. How do we not over-rely on email when you're trying to hit the masses? Thoughts on that?
Well, so I think it really does go back to establishing those norms, right? I think we have to recognize that as an organization, we're trying to communicate to 40,000 plus people, and so that digital channel is really important in ensuring that we're hitting as many people as possible. But then, as a leader, it's really understanding the audience again that you're communicating to and how they best receive communications, and thinking about how we reinforce those messages, you know, through a variety of channels. And then just to sort of add on to what Dr. Grady and Sarah were speaking to about sort of the planning piece of that is really, as a leader, thinking through like, what are the priorities for my team, for my area, for my organization in this week, this month, and then, you know, making sure that we're reinforcing those messages in the ways that make the most sense for your team. And you know, I would just say that in addition to a stakeholder analysis, make the case for developing a set of key messages that you're working off of at all times. So if you are, particularly when you're communicating change, so that as you're building out and tapping into different channels and strategies, that you're singing from the same sheet of music, so to speak, every time, and being consistent, which helps build credibility and trust in the messaging that you're giving.
I really like that. I think everyone knows, I think I've quoted this before, I like the West Wing. There are times during COVID I'll go back to the West Wing. And one of the things that I learned from them is it was always about staying on message, and they'd walk and talk really fast, which really, I like that too. But I like the idea of staying on message. Really helpful. Let me go to the audience. What are you doing in terms of being intentional around your communication channels and tools, and how are you not over relying on email for your communication? In the meantime, let me go back to Sean. Sean, did COVID change the way you communicate across the service line? And are you more intentional around communicating with MS Teams or kind of the virtual hybrid working world now?
Much more intentional, because it's so much more difficult to read your audience in an environment like this, and so you've really got to think about the message. And people have video exhaustion, so many meetings by Teams and so forth. So yeah, it is a much more difficult medium. It is a much more impactful medium, because everything you say and do, well, it can be recorded. And people will look back, and you just can't comprehend fully the impact that you can have just with little gestures and things like that. Not necessarily, it could be positive, it could be negative. I mean, it is exhausting.
Stressing me out, Sean. Now I'm sitting here, I'm like, oh God, I'm afraid this is recorded. I hope I'm not sounding stupid. So, but you're right. I mean, it does make a huge difference. What about you, Sarah? I mean, with the Penn Medicine at home, you have a distributed workforce that's out in the field most days. How has COVID changed the way you and the team are communicating?
I have to say, I think the pivot was so fast, for everybody, but especially kind of at Penn Medicine at home, where, we work virtually a lot of the time remotely up until COVID. But what I thought was really impressive, and I have to give a nod to, Sandy and Joan and Deirdre and others, is we quickly pivoted to virtual town halls to get messages out about what was going on with COVID, what was going on with PPE shortages, what was the news of the week. And those started pretty quickly every 2 weeks to really get to messages out to our staff virtually. Then I was also so impressed they went to virtual team meetings really quickly. For our hospice teams, they have to do interdisciplinary team meetings, every week. And so those went virtual. And I think that they were able to kind of use this medium really, really well, really quickly to kind of continue our workforce and to support one another. And definite nod to the managers who are also out and about. So instead of meeting staff in an office, they're out and about, out where staff are, out in the community where they're seeing patients, and other modes that way. It's been really impressive to watch all that change happen so quickly.
Thank you. I really appreciate those answers. I just have to reflect on the chat. There are times where you can be going back and forth on email, and sometimes it's just more efficient and effective to pick up the phone and have a phone call. And I'm probably showing my age. Someone said, please send a text before you're calling someone first. I feel you on that. And I do sometimes use MS Teams when I'm not on MS Teams and I have a chat. That's when I have trouble. So let's change directions a little bit. Sometimes communications around awareness or change or influencing, sometimes you have some difficult messages to communicate. Debbie, let me go to you. Any tips for delivering difficult messages?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I lean very heavily on sort of what I learned from a lot of the tools that PMA has developed over the years. But really, I think difficult messages should be delivered in person as much as possible. They should be one-on-one when they can be. And you should allow for time for dialogue with an individual so that they have the opportunity to, express their reactions to it in a safe space, while also making sure that they are hearing the message I think we're probably, you know, I imagine, I can't see the chat right now, but I imagine a lot of our colleagues and peers here are starting to have some of those conversations around the vaccine mandate right now. And I know it's really challenging. So but just encourage people to really, you know, you get to ground yourself. Those are conversations you need to prepare yourself for. And I think really, it's really around making sure there is a safe space for people to react to those messages more than anything.
Thanks, I really appreciate that. I think that's spot on. Reflecting on the chat, people are saying what can really be beneficial is if you are having a phone call, then putting some of what you discussed in an email as a follow-up is that repeat, repeat, repeat formula that seems to really be working for others. Debbie, Sonia asked, the expectation of how often we check email is kind of unreasonable. I mean, I think you said 30% of our day is reading and responding to emails. How do you focus on what you're working on? Some managers should be a little more flexible in terms of some of their expectations. I don't disagree. And yet, sometimes you need some urgent responses. And some of this has changed. Do you have any tips for Sonia and us on that?
You know, I think it's down to the individual and the role and what works for you and your team. I can tell you that for me, I block time. Like, I block time where I don't look at my email. And I'm very clear with the stakeholders that I work with that if you need me and it's urgent, you can text me. And that's what I'm going to look at. But during these times, you know, I'm focused on the work that needs to get done. Otherwise, you're right, you'll get pinged constantly and you can never sort of, you need that sort of time to focus and work. But I think there's tactics and techniques like that. It might be about sort of organize, you know, the way that you organize your email. Depending on the type of job you have, I've seen people use autoresponders in their email to say, you know, I will get to this in a timely manner, but if this is urgent, here's how you reach me so that you can make sure that anyone that's trying to get to you can get to you and that allows you the time and space to focus on the work you need to do.
Thanks. I want to go back to something you said earlier, Sean, and pick up on something that was in the chat. I read a stat that said 93% of communications impact comes from nonverbal cues. Now that many of us are having to wear masks when we're interacting, it's made communication a little bit harder. How important do you think body language and other nonverbals are for communication?
You know, I think it's quite important because you have to, if you're in your communication, you have to have a relaxed style so that people don't feel like you're very tense giving messages and so forth. And a lot of that is the nonverbal cues. And unfortunately, in a video media like this, got to develop some skills around that. I mean, I'm not a natural at this sort of thing, but I pick up tips from other people, whether it's, you know, the lighting, the setting, the tie. I notice I'm wearing the same tie. When I wear this tie, it means I'm talking about something important about Penn Medicine. And I don't know if people notice that or not. It's the blue and red, you know?
Listen, I'm very honored that you brought the power tie to Lunch with Leaders. We're very happy to see it.
So there's a lot of things like that I don't even, sometimes I do, but I don't necessarily realize it. And people know, okay, he's being serious about something right now. So it is important. I mean, you know, and I have, in my case, I have to study it and think about it.
Thank you. Sarah, same question. Nonverbals, do you have anything that you would add? Do you think this is pretty important and are you intentional about it?
I'm super intentional about it. And I've been like that for a while. And I have to tell you that, especially with the MS teams, we all really need to be thoughtful about it. Not just when we're delivering messages, but also when we're listening to each other. Your body has to be, your face has to be engaged in what you're listening to or what you're talking about. And in some respects, for those that are on meetings like these all the time, every eye roll, every look up when somebody's speaking, you can see it's magnified, actually. And so we have to really think about being engaged in the moment. And you've got it. Your body language says a lot. I can't tell you how many times I've given a message and I can just tell by the body language that, you know, somebody might not be listening. Or I know when I'm doing that where maybe I'm using a face where somebody actually gave me the feedback afterwards that said, you know, you didn't look really that happy, you know, on that meeting. And it affects people. And it can really, I frankly think, it can totally derail a messaging strategy if you don't really think and are purposeful about your nonverbals and your kind of your body language when you're delivering messages.
Couldn't agree more. I remember early in my career, I was taking a class on presentation skills, and really it was about communication to a broader group. And I remember the statement that the teacher made that you are the best visual aid and everyone is watching you. Any PowerPoint or any handouts that you have are secondary to you being the message. So being very present helps. I'd also say, as a funny aside, they also videotaped me doing presentations and they sped it back. And I flapped my arms so much that everyone laughed and thought I was a bird.
Anyway, wait, I do that too.
You do? I was like, I had my legs crossed, you know. Anyway, I don't do that anymore. I'm like very intentional about not moving my arms. Debbie Foster, let's talk trends. What changes do you anticipate for the future of how we communicate? Where are we heading?
I think that technology is here to stay. It's email is going to continue to be a primary source, and we're going to have to figure out how to manage that better and deal with it differently. We saw a real trend towards video in the last couple of years. I actually think that's going to go back. People are looking for more analog content and a little more sort of bite-sized, snackable information in the written form. We're seeing a lot of that. But I think essentially we're going to be seeing, at least from a corporate communications perspective, the way that we communicate inside of organizations, a much more integrated sort of sense where it's more personalized. So, I have a vision for the future for pet medicine where, you log into your computer in the morning and it says, good morning, Sarah Johnson. And here are, in addition to your schedule, here are the new tools that are available to you as a leader. And here are the top things that are going on at Penn Medicine at home. And, really making a much more personalized experience for the individual employee is what I think the future is going to hold for us.
Thanks. What about you, Sean? What about for physicians? How do you anticipate the future of how physicians communicate with one another? Is it the same as regular staff and other clinical professions? Do you think there will be differences?
I would say that a lot of this video stuff that we've been doing is going to persist. There are conferences and so forth. They're just much more effective and efficient held on a video platform. On the other hand, in clinical faculty meetings, resident teaching conferences, and so forth, there is a real value of the in-person attendance, and that's gonna come back. I think that interpersonal relationships that take place, it absolutely is essential. So we're gonna have a mix. It's definitely not gonna go back to where we were pre-COVID, but it can't stay all video either.
Thanks. Let me ask the audience, being a good communicator, it takes a lot of energy, intentionality, and some work. How do you find time to be intentional about communication? So I'd love to hear that from the audience. Sarah, let me ask you the same question. Like, this sometimes takes some energy and some intentionality. How do you make the time?
I think it takes time. It really takes a lot of time, and energy is a really good word for it, because sometimes it takes a lot of energy, especially maybe if it's those in-person difficult messages. Like, you've got to really get yourself in mind space to give them. But I think as leaders, or informal or formal leaders, you have to make sure to build that time into your day. I know we have a lot of work to do, but a bad kind of messaging will be cause you so much more work. So taking that time to be thoughtful, get yourself in the right mind space. And I will say this one little tip: never deliver messages or communicate where you're not in the space to do it well. Take a step back, breathe, do it, even reschedule, because your kind of mind space and being there is really important.
Thanks. I love Barbara's note, be concise, identify the subject and expectations early. And then she joked and said, I guess I've been bluffing the whole time. That's a good one. Preparation and mindfulness about the subject. Thanks, Susan. Kim, I lead by example and always have my camera on. My team models the behavior that I've had in that I've never had to demand that from the start. Great team culture, Kim. Thank you. If you don't take the time, it costs much more time later with the impacts of the lack of clarity. Amen, Sarah. Planning up front so the lift is easier when you execute will help immensely. Thanks, Dinah, and thanks for all your great communication, Dinah. Have a colleague review for feedback, Gretchen Kolb. Shout out to you. I agree. Listen, we work at an Ivy League institution. You can have somebody proofread your stuff. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Ask questions. Thanks, Kyle. Sometimes your audience will help you cut down on the necessary content to share by letting you know that what they already know. That's excellent. Sean, how do you make the time? I know you're busy. You're in the OR. You're running like crazy, no doubt. How do you make the time to be intentional about your communications?
You know, you value what you put time into. And there's just no true ways around it. That you've got to take the time out, no matter when it is, to prepare for the communication, like today's event, for example. Think it over and not, you know, in my own case, I have to have some time to think about it a little bit, then revisit it and come back to it a couple of times so I feel comfortable about what's going to happen. So if you value communication and leaders, that is one of the most important things about leadership is communication. You just have to put the time in. It's just carve aside the time, figure it out. As Sarah and Debbie mentioned, if you don't put the time in up front, you'll put 10 times the time in on the backside. So save yourself the work and invest in it up front.
Pay now versus the pay later. Yeah. Debbie Foster, how do you teach people to develop their communication skills? Do you have any tips so we can be coaching our people?
And I think a lot of it's been covered here today. It's really, you know, you have to do it. And if you're uncomfortable with it, then you really should do it a lot so that you can get comfortable with it. But also leaning into your peers and colleagues, you know, that final set of eyes as a proofreader to look at your work to make sure. I do that every day. I send things to my boss to be like, is this the right tone? I said, you know, we have it as part of our workflow for everything that comes out of our team. Nothing gets worked on by only one person ever. So, you know, I think that those tips are really crucial and critical, but I think it's really coming down to deciding that it's a skill you want to work on, doing, you know, practicing it like you would with any skill, because that repetition builds the skill, it builds the confidence, and, you know, really leaning into it, like just deciding that you don't have to do it all on your own and using your peers and colleagues to make things as efficient and, you know, concise as possible.
Thanks. Sarah, what about you? How have you built up the skills and competencies of those who surround you in terms of communication?
I definitely am going to mirror something someone said in the chat. Is I really do try to model that behavior, especially for my, you know, peers and for those who work with me, that, you know, on those good communication styles. And I also really encourage the team that I work with to give each other feedback and to give me feedback. You know, if the message that I'm giving or the way that I'm doing it isn't right, just tell me. You know what I mean? Like, I need all the help I can get. And that's the thing that I think that people don't understand is I think as leaders, we want to be told. If something knows that it's coming down the pike, it's communicated, people want to hear, oh, some advice on that. We're open. Like, I need that help all the time. And I think kind of having that with my team and encouraging the team that I work with that we can do that for one another has been really helpful. And it also allows us to hone in on our communication skills.
Thank you. I always say with my team, good communication is a reflection of good thinking. So sometimes we've got to start back in the conference room brainstorming, like, what are the messages? What are we thinking? How do we deliver it? Versus let's just jump into writing a memo or sending something out. So I think that thinking part is important as well. Sean, how do you measure the effectiveness of your communication as well as your communication strategy? You have any tips for us?
Boy, that's, you know, the measuring the outcome is going to be a little more difficult because you don't know if you transmitted the message you wanted to retransmit unless you see the group performance changing in a way that you wanted to accomplish. So in that sense, I think if you see the group starting to move in the direction that you had intended, then your communication was good. I cannot overemphasize repetition. Oh my gosh. over and over and over. I thought at certain times I would, in my own head, I'd be thinking, I have said this same thing a half a dozen times, and I'm going to say it again with a smile on my face, like I'd never said it before. It's, if you see the group changing in the way you had anticipated, then you're successful. I can't think of anything else.
Thanks, Sarah. Same question. How do you measure? How do you know it's working?
I completely agree with Dr. Grady that that's how you kind of measure it, kind of in the moment. I will tell you, in a couple of different roles at Penn Medicine, where we've actually used our survey processes. So it's kind of a nod to like fill out your surveys to hear that our communication strategies not that great, or we could work on them and have a plan to them. And I can remember really early on it when I was at Penn Medicine at home, but that was kind of one of the things that was really tied to engagement, as you talked about before. And we really worked on communication as our strategy. And through COVID, just recently, we did an engagement cultural safety survey, and we heard some communications things out. And that's great. That's wonderful feedback when people take those surveys, because it allows us to step back, rethink, how can we do this better in the future? So we don't do them that often, but it is a way to measure how you are as a leadership team, you know, communicating across your entities.
Thanks. I want to just quote Bob Bacon in the chat. They have a departmental staff brown bag meeting. All staff are required to periodically prepare and deliver a clinical topic to the department. Maybe it's Robert Bacon. Anyway, I love that technique of getting additional people involved so they can own some of the communication. That sounds good. Debbie, as the guru of communications, what do you look at? What are you and your team looking at to know how effective the COVID updates were? Are you looking at open rates, or how are you figuring this out? Do you know, like, have you analyzed the data to say the open rate is highest at this time on this day? Like, is there a magic?
For electronic communications, yeah, we're looking at all of that. We're looking at when and how people open their emails, what they're downloading, what they're clicking on, you know, how often videos are getting watched or rewatched, whether someone stays in a video presentation for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, the full hour, you know, where they're falling off, where we're losing them, so that we can start to look at where we can make improvements for things like town halls and events like this. A lot of times on print communications, we'll use custom URLs. So different audiences might get different URLs. So we can start to see like which groups are clicking through to which item, you know, which URL more frequently. We do that with QR codes as well on print publications or documents, huddle sheets, toolkits. And then, you know, we talk to people. Like, to Sarah's point, it's a lot about just feedback. So we speak with managers, we speak with employees, we, you know, ask them what they know, and then we sort of get a pulse of what's getting down to the groups, you know, individual groups and populations, and then how we can do it better so that we can make sure that the right messages are getting to the right people at the right time. From a broad communications, organizational communications perspective, that's what we do. You know, when I'm talking about sort of managing my team and measuring the effectiveness of communications that way, early on in my career, I was, you know, given some advice about feedback and how important it is. And so I actually like ask for it in every one of my one-on-ones with my team. So when I'm meeting with my employees individually, at the end of that conversation, I always ask, what can I do better? You know, what do you need from me? What, you know, so I'm soliciting it actively. And I think that that active solicitation of feedback both empowers the employees to give feedback, but it also really does uncover information that you might not otherwise realize that can help improve the way that you're communicating with the group as a whole.
Thanks, I love that answer. I think it's awesome. So our audience is always curious about our guests and hearing a nugget or two of wisdom on how you navigated your career journey and maybe one key experience that helped you become the leader that you are today. In a lightning round, may I start with you, Dr. Grady? Key nugget that helped you become the leader you are today?
Yeah, so I can actually, when I've been chair for about 8 or 9 years here at Penn, seemingly successful, but I wasn't happy with how the department was going. And I couldn't quite get my hand around this. We had some Wharton courses at that point. That was the first aha moment. Wait a minute, leadership and communication, are there teachable skills? And I realized I could learn from this. I could learn how to do this better. That Dwight Evans, the former chair of psychiatry, had said to me one time, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I was ready. And so I enrolled in a leadership course at the University of Notre Dame for a week, met with different people, it was a group of about 40 students. That week-long course changed my career because I realized that business has been doing this for years. Medicine, maybe not so much. So the whole way I approached people, the way I thought about communication, the leadership of the department, and particularly focusing around the other people. You know, what do they need to hear? What's their stake in this game? It was remarkable. So, you know, for those of you who want to pursue this, there are courses around all of this, and I would really encourage you to enroll in them and learn so that you can improve your own career.
Thanks, John. We've got a ton of offerings at PMA, so you can do it right here in-house. Farrah, same question. You had such an interesting and varied career at Penn Medicine and beyond. The experience that helped you become the leader you are today?
I think my major key experience is that I've had a mentor for the last, basically since I started here, one or two actually, that have been my go-to people who have been there for me when I'm questioning and talking about my own career growth, who have been there for advice. I've cried to them, I've laughed with them, and they've also pushed me to try different roles. Well, and I've been in a couple different roles in a different scopes at Penn Medicine, and it was with those mentors. It was one mentor in particular who was like, you know, I think you could do operations. You can do operations from HR, and I did it. And so I think that finding that person who's kind of your advocate, your mentor, your person in your career life is really important.
Thank you. Debbie, same question.
Well, I'd echo Sarah's comments about finding a mentor. I think that's crucial for anyone ongoing success. And, you know, if it's not a mentor, it's your phone a friend or someone, but someone who has that unbiased opinion. But for me, it was really around recognizing the diversity of my experience and the value that it can contribute. As you know, Cindy noted, I have sort of a non-traditional career path. I started out as a photographer and then moved into graphic design and then web design. And so much more on the art side of things. And sort of the passion for communications came through that work. And so coming into an organization like Penn Medicine, you know, where people have 47 degrees after their names and they're, you know, everyone is just really advanced and at the top of their game in everything they do, I was very hesitant to speak up when I felt like my opinion was different in meetings and in on projects. And a certain leader, Cindy Morgan, pulled me aside one day and said, why aren't you telling me what you think? It's, you know, and I was like, well, it's not the same as everyone else. And I'll tell you privately. And she was like, I have you at the table because you come from this at a different perspective. And your perspective is unique and it's valuable and it helps us think differently about the problems. And that was a real eye-opening moment for me. And it really helped me step into my own like authority and power as a leader and own it and feel confident when I was at the table with all of these positions and leaders who'd been doing this a long time. And so I would, that for me was the sort of pivot moment.
And now you're our expert on Lunch with Leaders, a talk show. It's amazing. All right, Sarah, something many people don't know about you or a hidden talent, real fast.
A very dear colleague a couple years ago gave me a tiny bracelet that I wear every day that says kindness is free. And I wear it and I look at it and I think about it all the time.
Love it.
And it's been totally meaningful to me.
I love that. Dr. Grady, hidden talent or maybe something people don't know about you?
Yeah, people have heard about this a little bit, so it's not a total reveal. I'm a beekeeper. And there's a certain percentage of people who love to hear about it, about 20%. 80% are very bored. So you can ask me about it sometime.
I love it. Debbie Foster, hidden talent, maybe something people don't know about you.
I'm a knitter. I knit. I'm the crazy lady on the L with my knitting needles out, knitting scarves and sweaters for all the people in my life. So. You ever want to talk knitting? I'm your girl.
I love it. Well, I can't thank you enough. I think that the chat has been on fire. I want to thank everyone in the chat. Their tips are amazing. And we're going to post this so everyone can benefit from reading the chat. But Debbie, Dr. Grady, Sarah, thank you so much for the inspiring, thoughtful tips that you shared today. No doubt that your experience and what we shared here today is going to help us all level up our communication game. So thank you so much. So, as you may recall from our last show, we're taking a break for August. Here's my PSA for all of us. First a break, and then a breakthrough. So I'm inviting you as a PSA to take some time off in August. Rest, rejuvenate, and get ready to have an exceptional fall. And right now, please mark your calendar. September 9th will be our first show back. It's going to be big, I promise you. You won't want to miss it. We're going to start teasing the September 9th content in late August, early September, but don't miss the date, so add it to your calendar. Now, you may be wondering, what are we going to do without Lunch with Leaders and you, Cindy, for the next month? Good question. And here's what, it's going to be the perfect time to catch up on the back episodes of Lunch with Leaders. Don't miss Catherine Morrison. Don't miss Roy Rosen. Don't miss Kevin Mahoney. And so many more, because just think about it. If you haven't seen it, it's still new to you. So you'll have your new Lunch with Leaders content in August. Let me sign off by saying thank you so much for all the great work that you and your teams continue to do. We're all so grateful. We see you. We're here for you. If you have ideas, suggestions for fall Lunch with Leaders, we're always listening. So be sure to share your feedback on the survey. In the meantime, have an exceptional couple of weeks, and I'll look forward to seeing you on September 9th. Thank you so much, everyone. Talk to you soon.